Welcome to an in-week episode of the Rayados 90 podcast. I'm your host, Eduardo Razo, and joining me as always is Patrick Meehan. Pat, normally we record either Sundays or Mondays, and we only do like one podcast a week, but with the Clásico Regio coming up, I kind of wanted just to do like maybe like a 40-minute podcast episode just to talk about the Cruz Azul match, because Sunday when we record again, I kind of wanted everything just to be, you know, surrounding whatever happens against Tigres. And so let's start with the matchup against Cruz Azul. Let me go with the starting 11 first, and then we'll just go from there. So obviously there were some players getting rested, having the night off, just because, you know, Diego Alonso wants to keep their legs fresh for Saturday night. And so against Cruz Azul, he sent out this, you know, starting 11. Obviously, Barovero in net. You had Vangioni, Nico Sanchez, Stefan Medina, and Edson Gutierrez playing on the fence. And then in the midfield, you had Jesus Gallardo, Celso Ortiz, Jonathan Gonzalez. And then up front, you had Charlie Rodriguez, Vincent Janssen, and Urreta Vizcaya. So, Pat, just give me your initial thoughts since we're recording maybe like 10 minutes after the match was over.
Yeah. So it was a frustrating match, really. We knew it would kind of be like this with all these new, with all these rotations, plus how Monterrey's playing, right? So I wasn't really expecting like our best match tonight. It was just same old, even worse. Because we had not our strongest starting 11. And when that goal came in from Cruz Azul, for me it was, okay, we're going to lose. That's it. Twitter's going to have a meltdown from here to Clásico Regio, and then whatever happens there, it will continue or whatever. But what I did like, or what, I mean, at least we came back, right? Sometimes this type of goals, because it was pretty late, the Cruz Azul goal can just kill you mentally, especially when we were away at the Azteca, the altitude, everything. And we came back and we did score. And it was crazy. It was funny in a way, because it was through Gallardo and Vincent Janssen connection, which is what we were criticizing pretty much all game. But it doesn't mean that it's still good, you know. A good pass can come in at any time, plus a little bit of a deflection that Janssen got lucky, and we got the goal. So at least I like that, the fact that we did come back and get one back. But as an overall game, it was typical Monterrey this season. It was bad, ugly, and all that.
Yeah, I was looking at the stats right now while you were talking, and they're not pretty. So Cruz Azul had 65% of the possession, while Monterrey only had 35%. As far as total shots, Cruz Azul had 22. Meanwhile, Monterrey only had 4.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to say that too. I checked this, but at some other point of the match, I don't know if it was halftime or a little bit after halftime, and we had 0 after 45 minutes. So wanted to add to that one.
Yeah, and they only eventually, Cruz Azul only had 5 shots on target, as, you know, Monterrey only had 1. So, you know, Cruz Azul did have a high volume of scoring chances, but, you know, only 5 of those shots were able to, you know, but, you know, one of them obviously got through, and the other 4, Barovero was able to make the save. But, I mean, I was expecting a draw. I just wanted to just don't humiliate yourself, because when I saw the potential starting 11, I was a little worried, because I didn't know where the offense was going to come from. I know Vincent Janssen was starting, but, you know, who's going to get him the ball, or who's going to create a chance for him to get the ball? Because, you know, when the lineups were announced, I was kind of a little disappointed that Maxi Mesa didn't start, because, like I tweeted out, he's the only player that has developed some sort of chemistry with him. Obviously, that friendly against León, you know, they started developing some chemistry, and you know, they both were the best players in that match. So, you know, I just wanted to see Mesa play with Jansen for a in a real match that means something. And when Jansen's the lone striker, so, you know, just that aspect of it was a little disappointing. And then that first half, obviously there was a couple of chances where, and we'll talk about it right now, that Jansen just seems to be thinking the game at a different level than some of the players on the squad. I don't know if you see it that way.
Yes, you're right. I totally agree. I saw it. You put it out on Twitter.
Yeah, and you said this a couple of weeks ago. You're like, well, Jansen's coming from the Premier League, arguably a top two league in the world.
Yeah.
And you're asking him, you know, to,
yeah,
come down a level or come down exactly a few levels.
Even though Jansen wasn't, you know, playing with Tottenham and starting and all that, he's training with them. He's training with that level. So it does affect to come down, because you have to adjust to that. Even though you're way better than everybody, or, you know, at least in the training ground, you've been in higher standards than everybody else. That's not good enough. Like, you have to somehow, in a funny way, you have to kind of be worse, not worse, but, you know, understand where these other players are coming from so that you can adapt to that. So that's what he's doing, and that's what Gallardo is doing, and that's what Banchioni or whoever plays that has to connect with him is doing. They have to adapt to each other. They've never been in similar. Gallardo and Jansen have never been in anything similar, you know. It's way different, and they have to kind of adapt. Also, language. But yeah, I saw that you put it out on Twitter, and after you tweeted that, I started kind of noticing it more. You know, you put it a little bit more attention on something. And yeah, like, he was frustrated. Well,
let's talk about that. Let's talk about the first GIF that I tweeted out. It was a pass or a pass sequence between Gallardo and Charlie. And I know a lot of people are going to blame Gallardo, but to me, the person at fault was more Charlie, because Jansen, if you look at the video, Jansen is expecting the ball in the box. Like, he's I think he's expecting a header, you know, or a cross to do a header. And I think Chadli has the ball, and instead of trying to, you know, do a little dink of a cross to see if Jansen can just, you know, head it right, he passes to Gallardo. Gallardo loses the ball, and there goes that chance. And then there's the other video that I tweeted out where Jansen recovers the ball, starts pressing, passes it to Bagnoni. He's asking for the ball right away because he sees that the defense isn't, they're not in their right positions, if for a lack of a better word or phrase. And then when Bagnoni finally reacts to what Jansen wants, you know, mm-hmm. the defender is able to close the gap, and there goes that. I'm not saying Jansen would, you know, dribble past one of the defenders or et cetera, but he can at least grab the ball and maybe generate a foul, et cetera. You know, I think that would have maybe come out of it. I don't know. But, you know, Jansen was, again, showing he's two or three steps ahead of his teammates. You know, he's thinking ahead. And,
yes,
you know, like I said, he's thinking at a European level when some of the players just aren't at that level. You know, some of them will probably never get to that level. You know, he's thinking, all right, the ball should be going right there. I gotta be there by the time the ball gets there. But if the person who's delivering the cross or the pass doesn't see it that way or isn't thinking it that way, then, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, it's what we said, you know, he thinks he's in another level and he has to kind of adjust to that. I don't know. I liked what I saw from him, you know, his movements,
he's not a poaching striker. He's not a poacher. Like, when it comes to strikers, he's not a poacher. Like, he'll get the ball back.
He recovers the ball. He moves. He finds spaces. You know, he can play outside the box. He can move a lot. And we said this the podcast, the surprise, the emergency podcast that we did when we signed him. He's not a box kind of guy, so that's good because he can play with Gallardo, he can play with Layun on the other side, he can play with our Avilés, or, you know, whoever's on the sides. So that's good. So now we just have to find him, get him comfortable with how his teammates play, and yeah, go from there, really, because he's trying. You can tell.
Yeah, he's trying, and there's times where he visibly shows that he's frustrated because, like we've said, he's thinking the game at another level, and sometimes his teammates aren't. You know, like I said, they're either not at that level yet, or they're never going to get to that level. And like I tweeted out, if Jansen is a long-term option for the club, then they're going to have to start getting players with high football IQs.
Yes.
Because, and, no, go ahead.
That's something. No, yeah, and that's something we don't have, really, thinking. Or we have very few, if you think on our whole squad. If you go by one, you saw Nico Sanchez, what he did in like the 85th minute. He went running and he attacked Jesus Corona. Like, what are you doing, our central defender, attacking? Did you see that run? Like,
yeah, super, I saw that run, yeah.
Why are you exhausting yourself in these minutes when we're defending for our lives? Yeah. That's one. The Dorlan Pavón, Avilés Hurtado, they don't really have very big IQs.
No, just by looking at their crosses, they just like to throw it in and see what happens. But yeah,
and we could go one by one. I mean, we're really not the highest in IQ, but that's normal. To buy those type of quality players to get around Vincent Janssen, we're gonna have to spend a lot of money or really do some very nice and precise and thorough scouting in South America.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, they're going to have, and putting emphasis on, high football IQ. Like,
exactly, yeah.
You got to know, especially if you're a winger or a midfielder, you're going to want one of those guys that can think two or three steps ahead, that when he puts the ball in a certain area of the pitch, that he knows that the striker or whoever is going to be there by the time the ball gets there, you know? And I think that's what Jansen was expecting. He was, like, go back to that first video, he's expecting a cross because he's, like, semi, like, he's halting his run. Like, he's thinking of running, but he stops himself, and he's wondering, okay, what's going to happen? Because, you know, he's expecting a cross. You know, he's trying to make a run so he can gather enough, you know, hang time or whatever to deliver a good header. And that header, you know, that cross never came. So, yeah, they're going to have to, down the road, like I said, if Jansen's, you know, part of the solution, then they're going to have to start getting players that are thinking the game like he is. Because, yeah he's going to be very frustrated if we still continue to get players who, with not that high of a football IQ. But, is there anything else that caught your attention in that match?
The match itself, what else? I mean, Charlie, Jonathan Gonzalez, I think he had a good game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie as well.
Charlie was out of, kind of playing out of position.
Yeah you're right. Also Banchioni. I think we should talk about him coming back, you know, playing.
He's good defensively. Yeah, he had a good game. I wasn't happy about that. That pass, I think he's the opposite of Nico Sanchez. Just keep away from doing something offensively and
yeah, exactly.
Just focus on trying to defend. So go ahead.
Because it's the competition between him and Gallardo for that position. Gallardo is better offensively, and Banchioni is better defensively. I think he did okay tonight, Banchioni, especially after coming back after so many games without even playing or even being on the bench. So that's got to be tough mentally and to have a good game and to be, you know, composed and everything. It was good to see. Edson Gutierrez, I think, also had a decent game to be a young player, young kid from you know. And I think it was an overall okay match.
But there's someone you have not mentioned, and that is Urrete Vizcaya.
Well, yeah.
He was kind of invisible. Yeah, he was like, I'm not sure if people directed. I know I saw someone set this tweet and they said that we were playing with like nine players. I'm not sure if they directed that to Ureta Vizcaya, but yeah, he was invisible for that first half.
You're right. Also, there was a scary moment with Barovero.
Oh, yeah. Especially like it was like in the first. It was early in the match, and
it was early.
Yeah, I mean that's age. Dude's 35, and he's cramping up, or he's.
Yeah.
I mean. Go ahead, Pat.
No, because you know it brought back bad memories to when we got eliminated by Tigres in the last semifinal. You know, not because it's bad that he gets injured, because I think we have a solid backup, but it's just that memory of our freaking goalkeeper is getting injured at this point. Yeah, of course. So imagine going into the Clásico Regio without Barovero. That would have been a huge one. But yeah, Ureta Vizcaya went ghost mode. Nico Sanchez. Oh, another thing I wanted to say, and this was something I wanted to say before we tied the game. I had this in my mind. Nico Sanchez didn't score a header, and Nico Sanchez didn't score a penalty kick. And what happened? We lose, but of course we ended up tying. But you know, it's incredible that Nico Sanchez, in every single game we win, he scores. It's just something that I'm going to keep repeating until we can learn that Nico Sanchez is not supposed to be scoring. And when he scores, it's fine that we win. It's perfect that we win. But it's a sign that something's not right. But yeah, we tied without his score with his goal. But, you know, it was something I wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to get out of there. Once Jansen scored, I just wanted to get out of there with the draw. Just get the point and make it out of there. But yeah, before we start previewing the Clásico Regio, I just wanted to give you or everyone that's listening an updated, you know, standings. So in first place you have Santos with 23 points after they beat the shit out of Veracruz.
I saw a game live. I don't know if Veracruz is just too bad, or is Santos just like...
I think Veracruz is really bad. I mean, it's probably a combination of both, but I mean, we saw Santos play really good against Monterrey, but Veracruz is on another level when it comes to being a bad team. Yeah. And second, Necaxa. Third, León. Fourth, Querétaro. Fifth, América. Sixth, Morelia. Seventh, Monterrey. And eighth, Pachuca. And in ninth is Tigres. So, before we move on to the Clásico Regio, I just kind of want to ask, is there any, out of those eight clubs that are in the Liga so far right now, is any of them either surprised you or maybe a club that you probably expected to be in that top eight that isn't, you know, obviously Tigres would be an example, but so far, who's either surprised you or disappointed you?
Well, surprises, I have few, actually. I think well, Santos is a great team, so it's normal that they're there.
Yeah, they take a tournament off or two, but then they come back. We saw it like two or three tournaments ago when they won the whole thing. So you know.
Yes. And then León, you know, they've been playing great with Ambriz, so it's normal that they're there. América, they haven't played really well, but they have to be there. But the other, really, all of them surprised me. Necaxa, Querétaro, Morelia, and Pachuca. Those are surprising ones, especially last season, they weren't really that good. And then this season, they just turned it up. Pachuca, like 3 weeks ago, all the fans wanted to fire their head coach, Martin Palermo, and they got him in eighth place. Querétaro's playing amazing.
And Morelia fired their head coach. They're the ones that did actually pull the trigger. It was like that one week where we saw, like, in a span of like 5 days, where like three head coaches were fired.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, they're coming up. It's normal when something's not going good. You can fire head coach. I don't know if you're listening, Carlos Vela or Julio Davino, but please just think of this. And then, of course, the ones that surprised me that are not in there are Cruz Azul, one of them, Tigres. And the rest are pretty debatable.
Yeah.
Maybe Toluca has been really underwhelming, but, you know, the rest are normal. But Querétaro, Pachuca, and Morelia are really surprising, and it's good to see that.
Yeah, sure. I agree. Querétaro and Morelia are the two surprising, just because when you fire your coach in season, as Morelia did, it can go either two ways. It can galvanize the entire squad, or it can just, like we saw with Toluca last tournament, where they fired their head coach and they brought in La Volpe, and it just keeps going south. But, you know, with Morelia, it went up, and, you know, like, those two are really surprising. And, you know, Tigres being, you know, obviously there's still plenty of soccer left, but Tigres is kind of underwhelming. They're not playing great. There's just, it's like Rayados. There's something that just doesn't look right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, let's get into it since we're already talking about Tigres. What's your expectation going into this Clásico right here? Because we're going in and both teams are not at their best right now. They're not in a good form. And maybe whoever wins it can turn around their season. They can catapult them. But, you know, what's your expectation for this match on Saturday?
Not the greatest expectation. I think looking at Tigres, you kind of say, oh, well, then we can do better. But still, I see Rayados and I don't see the greatest thing ever. So it won't be crazy if it ends at a 0-0 game. Just like a typical Clásico Regio where both coaches are want to, you know, handle their position or keep their positions, especially, I think, more Diego Alonso. Because if you lose a Clásico Regio, you know how it is. Like, things get rough with the fans and everything. So I think both of them will try to hold on to a result. If it's a tie, then perfect. Because they know they still got a ways in the season to go to, you know, get into the top eight. So, yeah, I think it'll be a boring 0-0 game, something like that. Hopefully not, but yeah,
I'm hoping it's not, but
that's what it looks like.
I'm hoping for disaster. I'm hoping for disaster defensively, because right now I wouldn't trust either defense to put on to slow another team down. It's probably going to have to be either missed opportunities or whatever, but yeah, I'm with you. I'm leaning towards like a 1-1 draw.
Yeah.
But my heart, that's my head. My heart is saying somehow Rayados will get up for this match and win, because I'm still expecting them to start this turnaround, because like we've seen it the last two tournaments where they're off to a slow start, or they're off, you know, they just don't look right, and then somewhere in the middle of the season they just turn it around and they go on a winning streak and then finish in the top four of the Liguilla spot. So I'm anxiously waiting. I'm hoping it comes. You know, the more matches go by, I don't think that turnaround that we usually see is coming. But, you know, my heart is saying, please let this be this game. Please win 2-1, 3-1, or et cetera. But, yeah, I have a feeling both coaches, if whoever scores first, might go into, defense mode, just because they want to hold on to the result. And it's just going to make for ugly football. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I'm expecting a draw. I'm going 1-1. But my heart is saying 3-1. So we'll see what happens there. But who's the most, I want to ask you, who's under pressure to perform on Rayados for this matchup that can maybe help change the narrative of their season?
Like a player?
Yeah.
You know what? From Rayados, nobody has really stood up this season to be like our guy, our leader, or in footballing wise, right? So maybe we just need a good performance from one of our attacking players. Like, one of them has to really step it up and be like, score a goal and an assist, you know, or something good. Because it's crazy that we cannot show anything offensively with the amount of quality we have in the offense. So I'm just hoping for one of them, at least one of them, to really step up and be the guy. Now, I'm not sure if Pizarro will be back by then. I think he's training already, or he's...
Yeah, I seen his... I think it was the last week that he posted something on Instagram that he was starting to... I'm not sure. Yeah, that was training. I don't think it was rehab, but I think he was already training. I think it was... Yeah, it was last week.
So I'm just hoping one of our offensive guys has to step up for once. One game in this season. Can this one be it? Because if we don't have offensive people stepping up and scoring our goals and assisting, then who's going to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, somebody, whoever, Funes Mori, Maxi Mesa, Lorlabon, whoever, but somebody has to step it up for us offensively. Because if not, this will continue. This is a trend that will continue because more of these players will be impacted by negative media, tweets, people criticizing them for another game without scoring, another game without assisting. So, they're in the most, somebody from the offense is in the most hot seat.
Since you already started talking on offense, I'm gonna cheat and I'm going to go with two players who could really use a really good performance to help turn their season around. And that's Miguel Layun, who obviously... It all depends if Diego Alonso is going to have him start, but he would have already served his 2-game suspension. And so if he starts, then he's going to have to put on a good performance, because right now, I don't know what is it with Diego Alonso, but he should be like borderline barely keeping his job, as a starter, because right now he's just having a horrible season. So... he could definitely use a good performance against Tigres, whether that be putting in good crosses that lead to goals or scoring goals from set pieces. I mean, he could really use a boost, morally by having a good match against Tigres on Saturday. And then the other one would be Maxi Mesa, just for the sake, because I've seen some tweets say, Edwin Cardona is still, I seen those comparisons between him and Maxi Mesa. Yeah. And so I would like to see Maxi Mesa take over. Like, you're expecting someone to take over this match, exactly. And I would like to see Maxi Mesa be that player that takes over that match that just says, I'm going to drag you guys, whether it be by scoring goals himself or creating chances. I want to see him just take over that match, and that's why we spent so much money. So, I'm hoping that happens, or at least one of the two. Anybody can step up, but if I had to pick two players, or pick a player, it would be those two that could
If Maxi wants to make a big statement on why they signed you, kind of thing, this is the perfect match, So, yeah, hopefully that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think this, installment of the Clásico Regio is one that you can expect Maxi Mesa to perform well. Last tournament, he was still getting adjusted to a new team, new squad, new country, no preseason. So, the Champions League final and the semifinal, and obviously the regular season, those are five opportunities, but I don't even think he started in some of them. So, obviously since he didn't, appear or wasn't even dressed for this match against Cruz Azul, it's safe to say that he's going to be starting, and more than likely too, Dorlan Pavón's going to be starting. But we'll see what happens there. But one last thing before we go, it's just, I just want this to be quick and cover Cruz Azul and then that way when we record on Sunday, we can just focus on the Clásico Regio, because I'm pretty sure we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about, even though right now there's not really much to talk about. But on Monday, Rayadas, there was some history made at the BBVA when 16-year-old Aileen Aviles scored her hat trick. When she scored the first two goals, I was like, okay, this team really just has to give her the ball. Like, it's like when you're hitting for the cycle or you're trying to score X amount of points in a basketball game, it's just like, dude, just feed her the ball. Feed her the ball and see if she can get the hat trick, you know? Mm-hmm. And she did. She did. Okay. She got the hat trick. And, you know, I watched that game. I was streaming it on a illegal site, but yeah, I watched it pretty much from start to finish, and she was, you know, she was balling. Like, it's just, you know, it's really impressive to see a 16-year-old, despite no matter what the gender is, playing against players who are professional and are like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, 9 years, even 10 years older than you, you know, like,
for sure. Yeah,
it's just like, you know, you scored a hat trick and you're only 16 years old. And then I tweeted out the Peter Parker meme with Kylian Mbappe. And that got some love. But it wouldn't have felt right if we didn't acknowledge that right there, because she just put on one heck of a performance. And then the other lone goal came from Daniela Solis, who is looking like she's back from her injury. And Ellen DeGeneres, if you're not sure, you're probably listening to this podcast, can you like invite her on to your show? I'm probably gonna have to go. I think her show is shot here in LA in Burbank, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm probably just gonna have to go with the picket sign up and then see if I can grab her attention. But yeah, as per usual, they're now at the top. I think they're like 4 points on top of Pachuca, who are to stay at 26 points. Meanwhile, Rayados have like, I think, 30, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the standings in front of me. But yeah, Rayados making history and looking like they're arguably the best team in the Femenil. So, Pat, is there anything else you want to add to this podcast concerning whatever it is that's on your mind?
As far as Rayados I want to just keep saying it. I just want to make sure people understand this, because believe it or not, after this match, I've seen positive things about Rayados and how they tied, which is crazy. We got to stop thinking like we're a small team. We got to stop thinking like we're in the 90s and early 2000s, where being in the middle of the table was something good. Going to Azteca and Cruz Azul and tying is not a good result, especially with Cruz Azul being like 14th or 15th in the table.
And with the interim head coach.
Yeah, with the new head coach that just... this is his first match at the Estadio Azteca with Cruz Azul. With the team we have, even if it's midweek, even if it's a double week, all of that does not really... it's not an excuse. We have an amazing team. We have two great players per position. We have a coach that doesn't make us play well, and we have to criticize it, and we have to get results in Estadio Azteca and wherever. I just want people to know that it's fine if people are criticizing the team, and you should start thinking of Monterrey as a big club, as one that should not be comparing themselves to other clubs looking from downwards up. You know, we are a top club. Even if we haven't won in a while, even if we have just won 4 Liga MX titles in our history, but right now we're a big club, that we have a big sporting project, and we have amazing quality players. We should not be playing this bad.
Play well. That's it. Try to win this match, please.
Yes.
Please, I just kind of want to throw it in or add more salt or more misery to what Tigres are going on right now, because they're coming off a loss against Puebla. You know, I think Lucas Cavallini scored the header. What is it, like in the 80th minute or whatever? It was like late in the game. And, you know, I think they're going more through a hard... We're going through a hard time, but they're going through a worse time just because... they haven't won, you know, they're either drawing or losing. Well, at least we're able to come out with some wins. But still, you know, it's let's win this match. Hopefully they get up for it, and hopefully we get the win, because you know, like I said, I'm waiting for that match or that point of the season where Rayados can turn it around. And with that, which we've seen under Diego Alonso, where, you know, they go off on a run where they win like 5, 6, 7 in a row or whatever. So hopefully this is the match. But yeah, like I said, short podcast just because next Sunday we just want to focus on the Clásico Regio. But Pat, one thing before we go, I completely forgot. What's your favorite moment in the Clásico Regio? Either let's not make it the championship. Give me like a moment. Obviously winning whatever that's, you know, obviously people are gonna say winning the con. Okay, that's good. But a moment in the match, whether it be a goal, save, by whatever, you know, argument, whatever, like favorite moment that for you.
Like in the history of the Clásico Regio.
Yeah, for that you've been watching. Like it could be recent, it could be whatever since you've been watching.
Yeah, I just recently saw this video the other day. Actually, it was I hate that I'm butchering this right now, but it's in the Liguilla against Tigres. And the goal that Guille Franco scored, where he missed it with his header, but it hit the point of his toe. It hit his toe, so it made a weird bounce, hit the crossbar, and then got in. That was an amazing moment, plus how he celebrated it with, like, Sion. I remember that one right now at the top of my head just because I saw a video the other day. But I also remember this one very well. I remember this was an amazing team, and this was one of our best games ever in the modern era for Rayados. It was the first leg of the quarterfinals against Tigres in the quarterfinals when Mohamed was still the coach. It was the season that we went into the final against Pachuca in the first leg against Tigres in the Universitario, where we won, I think, 3-1 or something crazy like that. Pato Sanchez was incredible. Funes Mori was incredible. I remember that match so clearly, and I missed that type of football from Monterrey. That's a couple of cool little moments that I remember right now off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bottle Vettel save on Gignac in the Champions League just because...
Oh, yeah.
That 35-year-old... He pretty much stretched out his entire limbs in that arm. I think is it that right arm or that left arm to you know, prevent that header from Gignac. And it's just like that pretty much conserved, you know, if it didn't conserve the title, it was one of the reasons why. But yeah, that's one of those, like, it sticks in my moment. And then I always see, like, when people follow me and I look up, you know, I just look at the people who are following me, et cetera, and there's always some people who have that screenshot as their header, like that bottle little save. I always see it. So for me, that one, and then I'm gonna go with the when Funes Mori scored that one goal where it's like tape to tape from I'm not sure who it was, I gotta look it up, but it's like from midfield pretty much. It goes crosses all the way to Funes Mori, and he's, you know, no bounce, no nothing, just boom. Strike. It was like the Dzeko goal against Chelsea, where it's just a cross from pretty much far away, and then it's just bam, like no bounce, no nothing, off the foot and in the net. So that's like that, you know, that one's one of my all-time favorite goals, just because, you know, you don't see that a lot, that very, those type of goals very often. So I'm gonna go with those two. Hopefully Rayados can give us good memories on Saturday, and I'll see where we go from there. But we'll have that all recapped on Sunday, and it'll be out Monday morning. And yeah, so Pat, if you want to plug in anything you want to plug in before we go.
No, that thing, that's about it. Monterrey.
Follow him on Twitter so you can get mad at his takes, because some people were mad at you tonight for your takes.
I tweeted out before, obviously, what we all see, the Johnson being annoyed at Gallardo, and somebody decided to insult me because of that. So yeah, follow me for those type of crazy hot takes that I make.
And then you can, yeah, obviously subscribe and subscribe to the podcast, obviously, because, you know, just in case you missed the tweet when I tweet this stuff out, if you already subscribe, you're gonna get the podcast. If you listen on Apple, be sure to give a like and a rating and a review. Give us a 5-star review and a good rating, just because it helps us. So you can obviously listen to this on Spotify too. You can subscribe there and
follow
then you
it.
Won't just, yeah, follow it and you won't miss it. So yeah.
Also not wanting to spoil anything, but also hoping for good guests coming.
Yeah,
up.
We have something. Hopefully, they don't fall through. One of them, we kind of got it confirmed. The date is confirmed, but we just gotta wait back on time. And then we might have someone this weekend. We gotta see, but can't promise anything. But we'll try to give you the best coverage of the Clásico Regio on Saturday. So
and also. Sorry to interrupt you again.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But also for the coming month and leading
we got a lot of stuff coming up. We got a lot of things lined up. So you're gonna get some really good content from other people who follow Liverpool, follow whoever wins the Libertadores, follows or is well aware of Qatar and Qatari football. So we got potentially 3 guests to cover that area. So, you know, and then obviously we'll have you guys cover for domestic stuff and then just other guests that we probably feel that we need to talk to. So, yeah, is there anything else, Pat, before we go? I'm going to take that as a no. So for Patrick, I'm Eddie. Talk to you guys later.